Webcasting around the world from the desert metropolis of Phoenix, Arizona, this is The Dividing Line. The Apostle Peter commanded Christians to be ready to give a defense for the hope that is within us, yet to give that answer with gentleness and reverence. Our host is Dr. James White, Director of Alpha and Omega Ministries and an elder at the Phoenix Reformed Baptist Church. This is a live program, and we invite your participation. If you'd like to talk with Dr. White, call now at 602-973-4602 or toll free across the United States. It's 1-877-753-3341. And now with today's topic, here is James White.
Test. Hey, listen to that. It works. First shot. We're getting better at this every time. Welcome to The Dividing Line. Yes, it is a Thursday evening. I'm expecting a rubber band or something much harder to fly around the corner at any moment and smack me in the head. But it's good to actually start a program, and the microphone works first shot. That's a good thing. Hey, let's test the phone lines now. 877-753-3341. Maybe we can have Colin and Katie call in again, and we can sing Happy Birthday again and explode the entire thing. Just watch the smoke come out from the vents and everything. That'd be fun. 877-753-3341 is the phone number if you want to get involved in the program tonight. I don't know about the rest of you. I have been listening with a fairly large amount of dismay to the cultural discussion, if we want to call it that, that has been going on, well, of course, for quite some time, but especially that was prompted by the president's press conference last evening. Now, I have not had an opportunity. I missed the Today Show this morning with all the Good Morning America Today, something, the one on NBC, whatever. I didn't see any of that because I have grades due tomorrow for a seminary class that I taught during the summer, and I've been sitting here working on that, and I just can't keep up with everything. And so I didn't catch all of that, and I wish that I had because I heard some interesting quotations out of it today. But I've been listening to primarily conservative talk show hosts, and I've been listening to how they've been responding to this sudden, what seems to be massive forward movement of the gay rights agenda. In fact, I'm not sure what I did with it here, but the Alliance Defense Fund. Let's see here. Here it is. Reaching. There it is. The homosexual agenda exposing the principal threat to religious freedom today. Alan Sears and Craig Austin. This is published by Broadman Holman from the Alliance Defense Fund. I just got this in the mail. It was sent to us. Alliance Defense Fund was the one that helped us with the situation with Barry Lynn, where he wanted to try to suppress the videotapes of the debate that we did on Long Island and homosexuality. And I've been reading through some sections of that, and the tremendous double standard, the fact that these individuals do not want equal rights, they want super rights, based upon sexual behavior. It truly is just an absolutely incredible situation that our society is facing today in regards to this. And obviously, given that you have no more than 3% of the population that practices homosexuality as a chosen lifestyle, a very small minority of people with a tremendous amount, a completely out-of-line amount of political clout. They have much more money on average than a heterosexual does, for the obvious reason that we heterosexuals who are married give of our lives to our children, and we have to pay for things like clothing and schooling and food and medical care for our children, and they don't have to do that, and therefore they've got a tremendous amount of money. And so they have all this political clout because money means clout in a corrupted system where justice and righteousness is no longer the standard. What is good for the nation is no longer the standard. It's just I want to be elected, and I will do whatever it takes to get elected, which unfortunately is how it works pretty much on both sides of the aisle anymore, sadly. Be that as it may, I've been very disturbed as I have listened to conservative voices responding to these issues. Just today, listening to the ruckus that has been raised over President Bush saying, talk about something absolutely radical for a president to say, we are all sinners. Now, let's face it, folks, that was what made a lot of people really angry, is that we are all sinners. Let's face it, that's something you might say in Texas, but that's not exactly what is said in most people's thinking today. That was what was offensive, especially in the context of addressing the issue of marriage. And then the man dared to say that he believes that marriage is between a man and a woman. And now, I'm not surprised at all that the radical leftists, the darlings of the media, are running about lamenting such bigotry. I mean, that's just how they do things. That's how they talk. That's how they think. That's how they act. That's just the way things are. What concerns me is how the response is being framed to this kind of a situation. I listened because I was had a dentist appointment today. I got to drive halfway across the valley and back again. This is the big valley, so I got to listen to the comments both of Rush Limbaugh and of Michael Medved. Now, most of the time they're pretty much on the same page, but not always. And I got to listen to both of them address this issue today on the way out and on the way back from my appointment. And in the process, over and over again, I heard the same thing. And I've heard this especially with Michael Medved. This has surprised me just a little bit in the way that he approaches this. But this seems to be the way that things are being stated. And from my perspective, as I understand biblical revelation and biblical truth, this is not a foundation for doing something that is right and righteous. But in essence, what is being said is, look, marriage should be defined by the majority perspective, and the vast majority of Americans believe it should be this way. Now, I know people say, well, you need to understand the political reality of our society. You need to understand the idea of being elected, and then the fact that we're dealing with a certain society. These people have been trained by the NEA trained schools and all the rest of that stuff, and so we need to be careful how we say things. But the fact of the matter is, folks, the only meaningful, sound basis for defining the institution of marriage is going back to when it was established. And when we do so, we have to deal with the fact that either law is based upon God's revelation of himself and the fact that he is our creator, he is the one who made us, he is the one who designed us, and he has the right to reveal his law to us and say, this is what I have designed you to be, this is my intention, my purpose. You will find fulfillment, you will find happiness when you behave, act, and think in this way. You either go back to that or we have anarchy. And to hear conservatives saying that what's right and wrong is dependent upon polls, is dependent upon the vast majority of Americans think, that is an abdication to the very people who have destroyed the truth that this was once a nation of laws, not a nation of men. I mean, the laws that established this nation were based upon the recognition of the sinfulness of man. The fact that we need to have law that is unchanging, that isn't based upon the whims of men, but is in fact something that is based upon the revelation of God, that is what constrains and holds man back in his constant desire to rebel. That was part and parcel of the thinking of many of those individuals, and even those who were not avowed Christians were still deeply influenced by that worldview. So to hear modern commentators, in essence, abandoning ship, abandoning the foundation, and adopting the very platform of the other side that says there is no objective truth, there is no revelation from God, we cannot continue to look at mankind as if he is the creation of God, as if God's law has any relevance here. To do that, what will be the end result of that? There's no possibility of continuing to hold these things together and to defend the Christian worldview, which really is the foundation here. I mean, when you get right down to it, you look at Islam, for example, there's the possibility of plural marriage within Islamic law and things like that. And so the idea, the American concept of a family, of a man and a woman and commitment and the raising of children and all those things that we call traditional family values, they had an origin and a source in the Christian scriptures and a recognition that God is our creator and God has the right to tell us what's right and what's wrong. And so once you stop admitting that, then you have cut yourself adrift from history. You have no background any longer upon which to rely. And what are we supposed to accomplish here? It's just a sad, sad thing to hear this taking place and to see the speed with which it's coming. Now, some people say it's happening so quickly that there may be a backlash. And it's true. When 97% of the population does not embrace a particular behavior, the 3%, when they start pushing themselves, may indeed experience a backlash. But then there's because of the adoption of a postmodern mindset, a anti-Christian humanistic mindset, the idea that there is a right and wrong being completely abandoned and rejected by a majority of people, you have those individuals who, while they are not homosexuals, have been quite simply brainwashed, have had their minds just removed, so they do not see how sexual behavior and sexual activity impacts all of one's life, even though it's obvious that it does. And so they will buy into any of this. They are just the people who are just absolutely bent upon throwing off any form of God's revelation of himself and a revelation of his law in our lives. It is just an amazing thing. So when we see the perversion of justice going on within our society, when we see certain political forces circumventing the Constitution, circumventing even the will of the people, because they are even more radical. They don't even have the patience to allow the poison to circulate through the entirety of the body politic. When you see them pushing ahead like this, they are just expressing their complete hatred toward God. This one, I think it was a congresswoman from Colorado, I think it was, that was saying this morning, and I could not help as I'm driving along to just chuckle in sadness as she is going after President Bush, and she's saying, "This is totally wrong. It is unacceptable. I do not accept it. Totally wrong on what basis? What foundation do you have? Totally wrong? Define your basis of wrong. Where do you get any of this? These people are never forced into a situation where they have to actually give some sort of meaningful thought process behind their statements. It's an amazing thing to listen to, you know, and it forces me back into the scriptures and to consider the importance of the concept of justice in regards to God. I remember back in seminary we were translating from the Psalms in one of the many Hebrew classes that I took, and Psalm 97:2 reads, "Clouds and thick darkness surround him. Righteousness and justice are the foundation of his throne." Zedekah, righteousness and justice, mishpat. That concept are the foundation of his throne. His very rulership is based upon this concept of righteousness and justice. And this is to be reflective within the Jewish system. The judges who gave out God's law and gave out God's they stood in the place of God. That's why they even called God. Psalm 82. Vindicate the weak and fatherless. Do justice to the afflicted and destitute. Who is that addressed to? The judges who were called gods. When a person is placed in that position of being a judge, they are placed in the position of exercising God's very judgment, and they are held accountable for that. I know there are Christians who would disagree with me with that. They would say, "Oh no! A judge will not be held accountable for what he does to the judge or she does to the judge. They'll only be held accountable for what they do as individuals and not their position as judges." I don't understand that. I don't understand that concept. I guess it comes from maybe some eschatological viewpoints or stuff like that. I don't know. But I don't understand that. I think that a person who is given that kind of authority in God's providence therefore must exercise it in a way that they can give an account unto God for what they have done. I really think that that's the case. And I know many would say, no, but that's my perspective. And a nation that finds itself filled with unrighteous judges, it's not the unrighteous judges that are going to bring God's judgment upon us. The unrighteous judges are the evidence of God's judgment upon us. Unrighteous judges are a plague on the land. The perversion of justice is a part of God's wrath being poured out against the godlessness of Western civilization as a whole. And let's face it, at least we haven't gone as far as most of Western nations have today. Look what's going on up in Canada. And I know we've got some friends up in Canada. There's some folks listening right now up in Canada. But they will tell you this whole concept of gay marriage, the total disregard for God's law in regards to the very nature of sexuality, the very nature of the marriage covenant, all of that is simply being thrown out. And the leftists in our nation are absolutely determined to follow in line with what goes on north of the border and in Europe. And we see that those nations have truly with abandon and with glee, and thanks to the educational system, ignorance on the part of most people, completely and totally overthrown their own history. They have overthrown their own foundations. And what system can possibly continue on over time when you destroy your own foundations? No system can. No system of government can do so. And we in the United States are actively seeing large groups of people seeking to destroy the foundations upon which this nation was built. That is absolutely, positively unquestionable. We see it all around us. And so what are Christians to do? Well, there are some who will say, well, we need to be wise in how we respond to this. And of course we need to be wise. There's no question of need of wisdom. But what does that mean? Well, we need to recognize that people don't respond well to black and white thinking. That's because their minds have been muddled. Those who say, we need to try to adopt the tactics of the other side. Well, then, if you adopt the tactics of the other side, if you adopt the tactics of the enemies of God and God's law, who are seeking to pervert God's law and destroy the institution of marriage and force homosexual rights, quote-unquote, down our throat and abortion rights down our throat, and corrupt our children, our marriages, and our families. And don't you think for a second they're not going to then seek, as they are in Canada as well, to take away our free speech rights so that we will not even have a right to do this? We'll have to go underground to say the kind of things that we're saying right now in the not-too-distant future, and there's many people who would like to see that. If we adopt their tactics, can we promote God's truth through a system that is opposed to his truth? That I do not understand. That I cannot begin to understand. I don't see how the prophets did that. It's not a matter of saying, well, we need to treat them as postmodernists. No, folks, remember something. Man, whether he wants to acknowledge it or not, is still created in the imago Dei, the image of God. That remains the apologetic point of contact. And you see, no matter how often the natural man seeks to banish the thought of the Creator from his mind, it is still there. It is still part and parcel of his created nature. And that becomes the point of apologetic contact. Man knows, homosexuals know that homosexuality is wrong. They know it's wrong. The guilty conscience that they have, the fact that they have to band together in groups to go out and do their public displays of their perversion in their gay pride marches is further testimony that they recognize the sinfulness of their actions. And it's a fulfillment of Romans 1. They know that those who practice these things are worthy of death, but they not only practice them, but they encourage others to engage in those very same activities. This is what we see going on around us all the time. These people are still created in the image of God. That is the contact. That's the contact point that you have with the unbeliever. It is not adopting his methodologies. It's not adopting his perspectives and approaching him as if we in some way, shape, or form can convince them through non-spiritual means to adopt truth. That makes no sense. And so it is a sad thing to hear, and I know Michael Medved is not a believer in Jesus Christ. I don't know what Rush Limbaugh's state of soul is. I don't get the feeling that he is either. And so I guess I shouldn't be overly surprised, but certainly those of us who look to the Word of God should see what the real issues here are. And should recognize that. And I know in our society you're going to be looked down upon. Fine, we're already looked down upon. Why should we care if we're looked down upon more? We need to start saying, look, you folks are anti-Christian bigots. You do not want me to exercise my religious rights. You do not want me to have the freedom to believe what I believe. And I'm not going to act like a second-class citizen anymore. I'm going to use the rights that I have while I've still got them, and I'm going to speak out, and I'm going to say that you are wrong. You are morally wrong to say and do what you're doing. You've got to do that. I guess I've been preaching, haven't I? It's troubling. It is very, very troubling to me to see people defending a position that is true, but defending it in a way that is inconsistent with the truth that's being defended. You know what I mean? It's marriage is not defined as one man and one woman because the majority of people think that. That is the myth that this somehow is a Greek democracy where majority determines truth. That has never been the case. And the fact that the founding fathers did not give the vote to everyone. They designed it in such a way that people who would know something about responsibility and the law, that those were the ones who made those kinds of decisions, might tell you a little something about where they were coming from. There has been, and I'm not the first one to say this, many people have said this, but there has been a not overly silent, but pretty much ignored by everyone, revolution in this nation. If you define a revolution as a change in the foundations of the governing system, that has already taken place. We're just seeing the results. And we may well be facing a day when our freedoms, the freedoms we have to say what we're saying right now, will be challenged and taken away. And that's already taking place north of the border, where you cannot even publish certain... I'm not sure... You know, how do they get away with publishing Bibles in Canada? Do they publish Bibles in Canada? Do they have to take out Deuteronomy 22 and Romans 1 and Genesis 18 and 19? Isn't it amazing? You can publish books in a certain nation, but you can't buy space in a newspaper to publish the same stuff. Oh my. And if you think that the people who defend free speech will come to our aid, remember Barry Lynn. Barry Lynn, the great defender of the First Amendment. But in reality, that First Amendment is only, in their thinking, meant to defend their freedom to say whatever they want. It is not meant to defend our freedom of speech at all. And his actions made that very, very clear. So, yes, one of our faithful, friendly Canadians is glaring at me in channel. But if that individual would like to explain to me where I'm wrong in what I have said concerning things north of the border, then I would be happy to hear what he has to say. But that seems to be the situation. Well, anyway, I now feel better, but that doesn't really accomplish a whole much. 877-753-3341. I don't see any indication on ye old computer screen that anyone has picked up their phones to join us this evening. Yes, there are none. 877-753-3341. You don't have to comment on that. If you have other questions on other subjects that we've addressed, that's fine. No problem whatsoever. that's right. I'm not wrong. And I know you hate it just as much as I do, but it's, you're stuck with it, my friend, since you live up there. And it's like, what was it back in the 70s? Acid rain. It is now, coming our direction and, eating away at the fabric of our society, just as it has done so, up there north of the border and in Europe and, yes, in jolly old England. It is amazing to think that in the lands of Charles Haddon Spurgeon and in the land of John Knox and people like that, that this kind of utter degradation now reigns supreme. Well, it seems that Americans are absolutely intent upon, well, quite simply upon ignoring that. And as long as our 401ks are doing fine, all is well, and our 401ks are doing better. So, must be a good thing, huh? 877-753-3341. We're going to take a break and give you all time to go running to your phones so that you can join the program today. And when we come back, if that hasn't taken place, we'll press on from there. 877-753-3341. We'll be right back.
Death. It's all works righteousness, you know. Can I manufacture grace for self and I in some religious place by weeping hard on your face or saying prayers to some dead saints, you know. Not to preach a little...
Answering those who claim that only the King James Version is the Word of God. James White, in his book, The King James Only Controversy, examines allegations that modern translators conspired to corrupt Scripture and lead believers away from true Christian faith. In a readable and responsible style, author James White traces the development of Bible translations, old and new, and investigates the differences between new versions and the authorized version of 1611. You can order your copy of James White's book, The King James Only Controversy, by going to our website at www.aomin.org.
What is Dr. Norman Geisler warning the Christian community about in his book, Chosen But Free, A New Cult, Secularism, False Prophecy Scenarios? No, Dr. Geisler is sounding the alarm about a system of beliefs commonly called Calvinism. He insists that this belief system is theologically inconsistent, philosophically insufficient, and morally repugnant. In his book, The Potter's Freedom, James White replies to Dr. Geisler, But the Protestant freedom is much more than just a reply. It is a defense of the very principles upon which the Protestant Reformation was founded. Indeed, it is a defense of the very gospel itself. In a style that both scholars and laymen alike can appreciate, James White masterfully counters the evidence against so-called extreme Calvinism, defines what the Reformed faith actually is, and concludes that the gospel preached by the Reformers is the very one taught in the pages of Scripture. The Potter's Freedom, a defense of the Reformation and a rebuttal to Norman Geisler's Chosen But Free. You'll find it in the Reformed Theology section of our bookstore at aomen.org. This portion of The Dividing Line has been made possible by the Phoenix Reformed Baptist Church. The Apostle Paul spoke of the importance of solemnly testifying of the gospel of the grace of God. The proclamation of God's truth is the most important element of His worship in His church. The elders and people of the Phoenix Reformed Baptist Church invite you to worship with them this coming Lord's Day. The morning Bible study begins at 9:30 a.m. and the worship service is at 10:45. Evening services are at 6:30 p.m. on Sunday and the Wednesday night prayer meeting is at 7. The Phoenix Reformed Baptist Church is located at 3805 North 12th Street in Phoenix. You can call for further information at 602-26-GRACE. If you're unable to attend, you can still participate with your computer and real audio at prbc.org, where the ministry extends around the world through the archives of sermons and Bible study lessons available 24 hours a day.
Millions of petitioners from around the world are imploring Pope John Paul II to recognize the Virgin Mary as co-redeemer with Christ, elevating the topic of Roman Catholic views of Mary to national headlines and widespread discussion. In his book, Mary, Another Redeemer, James White sidesteps hostile rhetoric and cites directly from Roman Catholic sources to explore this volatile topic. He traces how Mary of the Bible, esteemed mother of the Lord, obedient servant, and chosen vessel of God, has become the immaculately conceived, bodily assumed Queen of Heaven, viewed as co-mediator with Christ and now recognized as co-redeemer by many in the Roman Catholic Church. Mary, Another Redeemer, is fresh insight into the woman the Bible calls blessed among women, and an invitation to single-minded devotion to God's truth. You can order your copy of James White's book, Mary, Another Redeemer, at aomin.org.
Welcome back to Dividing Line. My name is James White, and we are talking about, well, we're going to talk about whatever the callers want to talk about this evening. I got to get on my soapbox for half an hour, and you endured all of that. And so now we let the callers sort of drive the car here. And let's start with Jonathan in southern Florida. Hello, Jonathan.
Hi there, James.
Hi.
Can I say first and foremost that I appreciate your ministry so much.
Well, thank you for calling in today.
By the way, you're very faint on the phone. I can barely hear you.
All right, well.
I don't know if that's my phone or yours.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay, just a quick question concerning the transitional issue of the Book of Acts. I recently listened to all your teachings on Reformed theology and become a convert, consequently, which is rather awkward since I'm in a Pentecostal church.
Okay.
Yeah, but my question is, I'm struggling with, like, Acts 8, for instance, when Simon seems to make a conversion to Christ, and then there seems to be, like, a quick apostasy. How would I go about in defending the Reformed position in light of those verses?
If you're talking about Simon Magus, I don't know anyone who would think that the man was a believer in Christ. I mean, obviously there are many people who confess some sort of a religious experience, but that's the whole point of the parable of the soils, is that when the word goes out, there's all these different kinds of responses to it. And many of those responses simply do not result in any fruit,
right.
And the individual is you have the shallow soil, the rocky soil, the thorns, so on and so forth. But none of them result in any fruit, and so that's what you have with people in Jesus' ministry, and the disciples experience the same thing. So I certainly wouldn't think that anyone would argue that Simon was actually a regenerate individual.
Yeah, I would hold to the same position you just given me there. I just found it a bit difficult to explain that view because he seems to make an outward profession to water baptism.
Well, so do there. Does water baptism isn't what saves you? There are many a person who has walked through the waters of baptism, and that baptism does not change the heart. So. The fact that he's called by the apostles what he is shows the nature of his heart.
Yeah, that's what I thought, because I believe a few verses down it kind of says that he had wickedness in his heart, so
yeah.
Therefore obviously not regenerate.
Yep, quite true.
So within the context, it is explainable.
Yes, it is, most definitely. So where are you at in Southern Florida?
Okay. I'm living in Boca Raton.
Okay, because I'll be in the big debate coming up December 5th in Tampa with Gregory Stafford on the subject of the deity of Christ. So hopefully you'll be able to make that.
I would love to do that.
All right. Thanks a lot, Jonathan. Thanks for calling today.
Thank you very much.
All right. God bless. Bye-bye. 877-753-3341. That's the number that Joanna in Michigan called. Hello.
Hi, good evening.
How are you?
Good, good, good.
You have to turn that computer down in the background or it's going to sound really weird.
Yeah, I can tell. Yeah, hang on, let me turn that down here. Real
okay.
Is that better?
That's much better. Thank you.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, yeah, the reason I was calling, I have a copy of a book called Spurgeon and Hyper-Calvinism. Are you familiar with that book at all?
Who's it by?
It's by a guy named Ian Murray, and
I thought that was called The Forgotten Spurgeon.
I think they're two separate books.
Okay.
I think The Forgotten Spurgeon is where he talks about how Spurgeon defends against Arminianism, and
right.
Then this one is where Spurgeon sort of defends against hyper-Calvinism.
Uh-huh.
And the reason I'm calling is, in this book, he seems to represent that Spurgeon kind of take, like, in with regards to 1 Timothy 2:4,
mm-hmm.
In this book, he seems to take the position that Spurgeon says that, like, that God desires all to be saved, that all means all.
Yeah, that's what Spurgeon said about 1 Timothy 2:4. He was wrong. I mean, let's face it, Spurgeon did not interact with any exegesis of the text that deals with the context of all men, rulers and those in authority, what comes before, what comes after. He didn't interact with 2:5 and the issue of mediation. So why he didn't interact with those things, it's not like those understandings were not already available, at least in latent form, and John Owen and others, I do not know. But Spurgeon was not infallible, and he did take the view that 1 Timothy 2:4 expressed, and others. I think John Murray took the view that 1 Timothy 2:4 expresses some kind of a universal salvific will that, for some reason, God does not choose to act upon and does not choose to bring to fruition. That it is a more of a decretive will in the sense, not a decretive will, but it's more of saying it's like God says, do not murder, and yet part of his decree is that murder will exist, and so they would say this is similar to the same thing, is that there's this general salvific will, but it's different from the specific decree of God that includes the elect that Spurgeon speaks of in other places. And so there are those who take that view. I do not take that view of the passage. I think that exegetically, when you look at the passage and allow it to speak for itself in regards to what all men means, that's self-evident as to what it's referring to exegetically. But Spurgeon did not say, I've looked at that and I reject it. He just simply said what he said.
Okay. All righty. Well, thank you.
You're most welcome.
All right.
Thanks for calling. Bye-bye. All right. Let's keep those phone lines buzzing. We've got two more calls online. That means folks are coming in. They're calling in this evening, and that's great. Let's talk with Jesse in Utopia, I have no idea what O-N is.
Ontario.
Ontario. Oh, someone could have said something about Canada. That would have helped me to understand that. But anyway.
Yes, the utopia.
The utopia where men can marry men, right?
Unfortunately, yes.
Yes, uh-huh.
Yes, I actually heard your comments, and then I had to click off the computer because I'm on dial-up, and then run over to the phone and call in.
Well, you're not the only one. That's how it works. But anyway, yes, sir, what can we do for you?
I was just going to mention a couple things in keeping with the whole homosexual issue. Then I had a quick question, and hopefully I don't monopolize the time too much.
Sure.
You probably heard about the SARS stock, this big concert that they had in Toronto here yesterday.
No, I didn't. Tell me about
it. Well, they had a big concert in Toronto to I guess get popularity for Toronto after it went through the big hit on tourism due to SARS.
Oh yeah, I did hear about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, anyways, right now in Vancouver they're having Gay Pride Week.
Oh, it's now up to a week now.
Yeah, huh? A whole week.
Yeah. And, soon it'll be a month, and then it'll be years at a time.
Who knows? Anyways, but they are complaining out there, and I'm not exactly sure if they're complaining that the government didn't throw enough money into Gay Pride Week, or if they're complaining that the government didn't throw money at them to hold some sort of a similar concert, gain approval and tourism popularity for Vancouver thing. But if it is, if it's the whole we need more money for our Gay Pride Week, I mean, that's kind of in keeping with BC out there.
And that's just there.
Yeah. And it's becoming more and more across Canada.
Well, and across the United States, especially California. California and Canada both start with CA. And
there's a hidden agenda.
There is.
Conspiracy there.
Well, it's not very hidden anymore. And sadly, in both of those places, your money, the morality of the left is that your money should be used to promote worldviews that are directly abhorrent to your religious beliefs.
Yes.
We just need to understand that is honestly what is being said, and people need to start saying that and saying it repeatedly and out loud because it's wrong to do that. Even on their basis, it's wrong. So, it's amazing.
Yeah, it really is. And at least on the books right now in Ontario, if I was to stand up and preach against homosexuality from the pulpit, on the books, legally, I could be charged with a hate crime.
I know it's coming in our own nation, and nothing has been done along those lines yet. Is someone going to try to, in essence, bring it into the court to force a decision, or is that, given the nature of the Supreme Court in Canada, is that not what you want to see happen?
Probably not what we want to see happen right now, actually, but it is actually, that's the way that the laws would read, and thankfully they're not enforcing it, but should they desire to do so, they have the legal right to.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But, oh, my. What was your question? Because we've got Gary and Adam online waiting as well. So.
All right, I'll fire this one off quickly. It has to do with the dreaded L on the acrostic.
Yes, uh-huh. Let's go ahead and switch topics while we're at it. Let's make sure everyone knows there is no really direct or logical connection between particular redemption and the previous topic.
Anyways, I was recently talking with someone, and just to make a long story short, he did not subscribe to limited atonement. He was a TWIPper, but he held to a belief that there is a real propitiation, a real redemption, not just a potential one, for all men without distinction and exception. And he held this, the only sin that would condemn a man is not accepting Jesus Christ.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And he had this belief that all men are really and truly redeemed,
mm-hmm.
all men without exception. And I took him to Revelation 5:9, where it says, they sang a new song saying, you are worthy to take the scroll and open its seals, for you were slain and have redeemed us to God by your blood out of every tribe and nation.
Mm-hmm.
And tribe and tongue and people and nation. And I suggested to him that this verse would, in my opinion, be a death blow to his opinion, because it says that they are redeemed out of every kindred, mm-hmm. tongue, tribe, and nation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, am I exegetically weak on that, or is that highly suggestive in the text?
Well, it's interesting. I had up, because you never know how many calls we're going to get or what kind of calls we're going to get, and so I had up more of Dave Hunt stuff, and I a couple weeks ago had put this material together, and I had 13 clips. We've done the first seven of them, and the 11th, which I was going to get to this evening if we didn't have calls, the 11th, here's what I had put as my notes, so I could sort of introduce it and make comments on it after it played. This is the 11th cut. What is your view of limited atonement? Mainly McMahon commenting, then Hunt says Christ paid the penalty for every man. Note Revelation 5 and how silly the statement is if universal atonement is correct. So that I'm reading you what I wrote a couple of weeks ago, and that's exactly what you just said. And that is, if there is a true substitutionary atonement that is made so that this redemption is not just a theoretical redemption, but it's a real redemption, then Revelation 5 does strike me as being a death blow, because it becomes a nonsensical passage. If, in point of fact, what you have going on is that this redemption has to be somehow differentiated from purchase with... Hello? From purchased with your blood. You still there?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Not sure what happened.
I don't know either.
I must have been someone on the other side of the wall experiment. I wonder what this button would do. I agree 1,000%. The if, in fact, what we have in Revelation chapter 5 is a reference to the relationship between Christ's atoning work and the actual accomplishment of salvation itself, then yes, Revelation 5 is directly addressing that, and it just simply makes no sense if a universal substitutionary atonement is actually the biblical teaching. So I think you're right on the ball there.
All righty.
Well, you keep serving the Lord up there in Canada, and we'll pray for you in your foreign missions work.
Thank you very much.
All righty, sir. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right. The calls keep on coming. Let's go on to Gary in Abilene, Texas. Hello, Gary.
Hello, Dr. West.
How you doing?
Fine. How you doing?
Doing all right. You down there in Texas?
I'm down here in Texas.
Yes, sir.
Where it's as much a state of mind as it is a state of the union.
Hey, well, you know, I think y'all should just, you're big enough, I think y'all could secede and get rid of all this weirdness.
I think
we might just move on down there, except it's just too flat.
My thoughts exactly, sir.
I'm sorry. I am just so politically incorrect when I start making comments about someone's accent. But hey, you know, I drove from Houston home last month, and that was that. You know, there ain't much in West Texas. Did you know that? Have you ever been to Ozona, Texas?
Ozona, Texas. Yes, I have. Used to hunt there.
You used to hunt there. Well, what were you shooting?
Four-legged Bambis.
Four-legged Bambis. Well, let me tell you something. There ain't a whole lot there.
Right? Oh, sure there is.
Oh, please.
A whole lot of sheep.
Well, there you go. Anyhow, well...
Yeah. Anyway, the girls in Arizona love us. They love our accent.
Oh, yeah, well... Sure, yeah. Uh-huh. Okay, anyways, you wanted to talk about John 3:16.
Yes, sir, I did.
Okay.
Before I get into that, could I throw something in right quick?
Sure.
On the idea of homosexuality?
Well, coming from Texas, that is the same state where the president's from, so
that might
give you even more of a basis to say something.
I think everybody ought to send in a letter to the Bravo channels about 3 weeks ago after they passed that sodomy law.
Yes.
On one particular Sunday, the whole day was nothing but gay marriages.
Oh, good grief.
And I've never seen nothing like that in my life.
Well, aren't they the ones who started this gay eye for the straight guy? Or didn't that initially come from Bravo as well?
I
was my recollection that it first. Yeah, see, Rich says I'm right. I think that's where they started. What did it get picked up by the national media, NBC or something? I don't know. Anyway, yeah, these media types are very much supportive of all this kind of stuff. So it's I agree. We should. But anyways, on to John 3:16 because we've amazingly enough have lots of callers today. It's lots of fun. So.
What I was wanting to talk about John 3:16 is, mm-hmm. James, is God's laid this on my heart several months ago, this particular scripture. And I've been struggling with it and everything. I've listened to your ministry and your sermons from your church, and as well as the one that you did on the 22nd.
And did you read the fairly lengthy discussion of this passage, verses 16 and 17, on our website in my response to Dave Hunt?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yes. And I was wondering, if have you ever written a book pertaining to this issue?
To just,
John 3:16.
No, to just the verse?
Just the verse and just the way you describe it, so eloquently. And
no, I mean, I've addressed it within the context of, now that I think about it, probably just basic comments. I don't think I've put anything in a book, whether it's God's Sovereign Grace or The Potter's Freedom, that was as full as the open letter. Now, I did in the Debating Calvinism book that will be coming out in February from Multnomah with Dave Hunt. I obviously had to address this rather fully, but I only had the opportunity of addressing it within a 2,000-word response to one of Dave's presentations. So I had to cut out probably about 40% of what's in the open letter response. So the open letter response is probably the longest section, and that's why I'm seeing websites popping up. Well, not websites, but individuals popping up responses to it on various and sundry websites. In fact, I got an email from a guy just yesterday that said, hey, I've refuted you here, and I go and look at it, and he says, now, I've not read Dave Hunt's book, and I don't know anything about this argument that's going on. However, here's my comments. And I'm like, oh, great, that's real useful. So I think that's about the longest thing.
Describe it and talk about it, like on the 22nd, is the best I've ever heard anybody put it. And that's the way God put it in my heart, is the way he wants it understood. But so many people misinterpret it.
Oh, I know.
And it's like it's brainwashed into them.
Well, it's not just brainwashed. It's tradition, man. It's
exactly.
Tradition. That's what we're looking at, is tradition.
But what I'd like to see, James, is maybe if you couldn't put that description into some type of handout booklet.
You mean like a track type thing?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I think so many people fall short because of John 3:16, because it is the first verse we learned.
Well, you know, that's not a bad idea, because one of the things we started doing, and you're talking to half of the staff, and you talk to the other half of the staff when you called in. So we're a small ministry. One of the things we did start doing once was putting together these what we call electronic tracks, and even now they exist on the website, and hence it would be something that you could download and print in a format that would allow you, like, to fold it up or give it to somebody or something like that.
Exactly.
And that's certainly, yeah, in Adobe PDF format. And that would be something that wouldn't be all that difficult to do, to take the comments as I gave them to Dave and to present it in an understandable way. That's certainly something we could put on the table and try to get done.
Because really, the way that you teach it, it's so hard for the common person, the common believer, to get that understanding across to another person.
It's not because the text is difficult. It's just because of the presence of having heard it used in another way over and over and over again. That's what makes it difficult. It's not
exactly
that the language is difficult. It's just the tradition stands in the way.
Right, and you just breeze right through it, and it amazes me. And I've sit there and listened to it, and I've wrote it down so I can learn to explain it the way you do, and it's...
Well, I'll tell you what I'll do for you there is that, I could just record it in sort of for Texans, you know? We could give John 3:16 for Texans. How does that sound?
That sounds great, James.
In fact, we got somebody in channel named Cow Poet. He writes cowboy poetry. Maybe we could have him help us out with that a little bit. And
I am in channel every once in a while under Fisherman, by the way.
Oh, okay. Well, you may have seen Cow Poet in there, you know.
Yeah.
We'll get a picture of him on the front of it, because he looks like a cowboy.
And I hope to make that cruise with you guys in December.
Well, good. I'm looking forward to it myself. I was talking with Michael Fallon about it today. So, excellent, brother. Well, thank you very much. We're going to try to sneak Adam in real quick here, so I'll need to let you go, Gary, and talk to you later. God bless you. And let's go ahead and real quickly run over to Adam. Hey, what is this? Two Texans in a row. Texas has risen again. How are you doing, Adam?
I'm doing really well, Dr. White.
Well, see, that I can tell you're in Texas, too. How far from Abilene is Vernon?
My goodness. I've been to Abilene several times, but never from Vernon.
Okay.
And so
is it east, west, north, or south?
I think it's kind of to the west,
okay.
Southwest. Okay.
All righty, sir, what can we do for you?
Well, I've got a question about Romans 1:26-27.
Right.
And and a seeming coincidence, somebody sent me the other day, just a question about that, and they sent me a bunch of links to some, I guess, pro-homosexual interpretations of those texts.
Okay, let me ask you real quick, Adam, have you seen my book called The Same-Sex Controversy?
I was considering buying it, actually. Yours was the first site I went to after
that. Right. One of the chapters, Jeff Neal and I co-wrote that, one of the chapters that I specifically wrote myself was on Romans chapter 1. That was one of the focuses that I worked on, and so There's a lengthy section there. Obviously, I went over it in the debate with Barry Lynn as well. But you're right. There's a tremendous amount of stuff written out there that basically tries to remove this from being relevant to the issue of homosexuality. Was there a particular perspective of that you wanted to ask about?
Yeah. The interpretation that a lot of the... It was mostly just, like I said, websites. A lot of things that I read were... The direction they were going was... because it's natural for a gay person to be gay,
right?
They could not actually commit an unnatural act by having sex with another man,
right?
And so, that was basically the argument. But it's not that doesn't have anything to do with genuinely homosexual people, because it wouldn't be unnatural for them to do that,
right? So there, yeah, as if the Apostle Paul would have that concept within his own thinking. It's interesting. If you would start to list the arguments that pro-homosexuals use on a biblical basis, one of the normal arguments about Romans 1 is that Paul could not be addressing modern concepts of homosexuality because he did not know of modern, loving, committed homosexual relationships. I would dispute every one of those terms, by the way, but that's the terminology they'll use. When you think about it, that's an argument against what you just said, because the only way that the argument that you just presented could have any meaning in the text is if Paul did know, and in fact believed, that there was this natural concept. The problem is, when you look at natural function, for example, verse 27, the same way also the men abandoned the natural function of the woman. Well, what is that? That is natural sexual intercourse between male and female. That is clearly what is presented there. And so then when it says, for their women exchanged the natural function for that which is unnatural, and the same way also the men abandon the natural function of the woman and burn in their desire toward one another, if you put those three phrases together, then the unnatural has just been defined as men burning in their desires toward one another.
Right.
So you have both male homosexuality, adult, by the way, because the third common argument here is that Paul's only talking about a situation of pederasty here,
right,
and not about adult male with adult male homosexuality. All of those fall when you simply allow those the text to define itself. The natural function, male and female, so the woman abandoning that is lesbianism. The men abandoning that male homosexuality, men with men committing indecent acts and receiving their own person's due penalty of their error. When I asked Barry Lynn about that phrase, when it talked about degrading passions and indecent acts, you know what his argument here was? That Paul is only talking about sin before verse 26 and after verse 27. And he literally said in the debate, degrading passions and indecent acts are not sins. If you can believe that. Well, you might want to listen to that debate, because it might be very, very interesting. And I did address that in the book, and I hope you can get hold of that. Thank you, Adam, for calling from Texas tonight. Gary, Jesse, everyone else who called in, Joanna, thank you very much for making the program what it is. Thank you for listening. And Lord willing, we'll see you next Tuesday morning here on The Dividing Line. God bless.
The Dividing Line has been brought to you by Alpha and Omega Ministries. If you'd like to contact us, call us at 602-973-0318 or write us at P.O. Box 37106, Phoenix, Arizona 85069. You can also find us on the World Wide Web at aomin.org. That's aomin.org, where you'll find a complete listing of James White's books, tapes, debates, and tracts. Join us again next Tuesday morning at 11 a.m. for The Dividing Line.